This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey, everybody. What is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark and Kevin here in the aftermath of a very, very eventful Canadian Grand Prix in one of our two hometowns, obviously not mine. Kevin, how's it going tonight?
Going good, good, Marky. Busy week in Montreal with the Grand Prix, with the final wedding preparation as well. Because, yes, I'm getting hitched at the end of the month. So that explains my absence of the last few shows. But I had to come back for the Montreal Grand Prix. I had the chance to talk to a few people surrounding the Montreal Grand Prix. I have a few info on the new paddock structure, on the new paddock club. It's very spacious. It's big compared to what it used to be. Have some info as well on Vettel and his reaction behind the scene after the controversy. But yeah, the eventful part of the Grand Prix, Mark, it's funny because it wasn't really the race part. Well, there was a few things, but yep. It was more the aftermath and how people reacted to a decision taken by stewards that really is what we remember right now after the Grand Prix. No one's talking about Hamilton winning once again. Mercedes doing another victory. No. We're talking about Vettel and how angry he is about the decision.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it really is all about the fallout of that 5-second penalty he was given after he went off of the track. But Kevin, why don't you give everybody a little bit of context? Obviously, Montreal is your hometown. You're familiar with the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. I mean, you've been there many times. You've attended the Grand Prix. You've biked around the circuit. So just give us a little bit of context what the track is actually like after you come out of that the Senna S and into that series of corners where Sebastian actually went off and then rejoined the circuit.
What we don't see on the TV is there's a change of elevation. It's not flat. You mentioned me on my bike. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's not flat. There's about a 50 meter climb in the actual circuit itself that destroys and burns my my thighs every week when I go biking there. But no, it's one of those spots where he did have that is right there next to where the old Terre des Hommes pavilion, I believe, is. And normally we don't see all those pavilions because there's the stands and all the fences, so you don't see all the nice remnants of the 67 international exhibition that is on the island. But Mark, yeah, there is a change of elevation. You climb a bit, mixed with old tires that he had, mixed with then making a driver mistake, going into the grass. It's not only in a place where there's elevation angle in the grass, it's also a wet area. There's just meters away, there's a river, and it's on an island. So the grass is usually pretty wet even on a hot day, so your tires are a bit slick and full of dust and earth and grass and water. So you come back onto the track, you do have a little bit of less grip, and it happened what we've seen. It's luckily there was no accident. You could have seen, it was so close. Both drivers reacted the best way, and I think that's where I have a problem with this is, you know, I've talked to people, Mark, because of my regular job. I have the chance to, during the Grand Prix week, rub shoulders from the Sky Sports team to certain F1 team that I don't necessarily want to mention, to stewards and to the president of the stewards or the Association of Stewards in Canada. I know him personally, so I do have some insight. And it's funny how everyone looks at it a different way, but at the end of the day, Mark, everyone's like, yeah, I wish I wish it wasn't that way. I wish it was decided on the track. Everyone can agree, disagree about the decision. It's still a shame that a decision had to be taken.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, and just like yourself and everybody else, is that the outcome of that race, that was, it was taken away from Vettel and Hamilton. And honestly, I was really enjoying the scrap that these two guys were having, because Seb would pull away a little bit and Hamilton would pull him in, and they were just miles ahead of everybody else. They really were off having their own race, the two of them. And it really sort of came down to the question is, well, is Lewis going to get close enough to have a try and make a pass on Sebastian at some point? And it was just unfortunate that Sebastian had that issue that he did, where as he goes into that, I guess that would be turn four on the track there, just the rear end of the car started to come out on him. So he did the smart thing. He's not going to let the car continue to spin and slide and lose track position, or perhaps slide into the barrier there and damage the car, which would obviously have ended his race permanently that afternoon. And I thought, to me, my initial reaction was it was a racing incident. And I guess if you really dive into the weeds and really look at it a lot closer, that the decision wasn't so much how he rejoined the track, but it was the second wiggle that he made.
It's more that
on
he's,
the steering wheel. Yeah.
What I was told, and this does not come necessarily from stewards themselves, but it does come into the same type of explanation of what really irks some people in the way it happened, is if you look at the replay, he goes off, he comes back, but he puts himself into the racing line. He literally puts himself into the racing line to not necessarily to block, but to continue his merry way, not paying attention to what Lewis was doing. And you can see when you look at the replay, Lewis is trying to go to the right of him, but then he's like, yeah, I shouldn't try that because it's too risky and he doesn't see me. And that could be what the risk of this was, that Vettel would have pushed Hamilton into the wall without wanting it to be, but just by rejoining the track. But you do see Vettel, though, go straight into the racing line and being squared with the racing line. So he kind of knows Vettel's there, Hamilton's coming, because he's kind of taking over the spot that Hamilton would have with his momentum of his faster speed at that moment. So there's that too. And I think the fact that he comes back on the track, that's fine. But if he would have stayed a bit left of the true racing line at that moment, recognizing that I made a mistake, it doesn't mean that Hamilton would have gone there. And you can try to make sure you don't lose more than a fraction of a second. But still, I think it's that movement of going back onto the track and then going into the racing line, blocking a potential passing lane of Lewis Hamilton.
Sure, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a moment, Kevin, if I may. So if that second move that he's being judged on is where the penalty comes from, then I guess we can say he's already back on the track. But if he's still in front of Lewis Hamilton, is he not allowed to make one racing maneuver to defend his position?
Well, that's where it becomes interesting.
Yeah.
Is that second movement still part of him getting back into the track, or is it when so that's where there's a big nuance there, is which one is it? When does it stop being a guy went off track and came back in track, and when does it become a racing incident? Or when does it become just back on racing? I would be interested to see where the closest steward stand is with a flag and where the closest local yellow flag was waved as soon as he came off the track. And I think that's one of the things too, because it doesn't really happen usually at that spot on the track. There's not two or three stewards in those positions to clearly be able to signal a local mistake or local incident where a car went off track and going back on track and then being safe again. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're having this controversy and this conversation, is the lack of immediate response that you can have on a 2.8 kilometer circuit. You cannot have someone every 10 feet, and maybe 10 feet is exaggerated, but it's just to illustrate the point. Sometimes a different perspective, a different point of view from a steward that is in a spot on the track that has a perfect angle, different angle. And by the way, the stewards have way more camera angle than the regular folks at Sky Sports or anywhere F1, the international broadcast that we see on French TV. They do have a lot more angles and a lot more contacts with the stewards themselves that were present in the closest steward boxes. So the decision was taken. Do I agree? Do I don't agree? Of course, I think it's too bad that it has to come to a decision like this. And, you know, no arm, no foul. And in my mind, if there's no parts of car flying, that's when penalties should be involved, when there's an actual incident. Like, because that now it becomes Minority Report here a bit, Mark, where we see you had the intention to block him, so we're giving you a 5-second penalty for intention of doing something wrong. Well, that doesn't hold up in court. You need to actually do something wrong to be accused of something. So I guess that's where I stand.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after we take our first break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, welcome back to Scuderia F1. Mark and Kevin here, dissecting the controversy at the Canadian Grand Prix last weekend. And before we get back into it, Kevin, I just want to share an email from listener Richard LeBlanc. And I should say that some of my my thoughts in the previous segment were in part influenced by Richard's email. So I'll just read the message that he sent to us. And Richard says, "I think the stewards' analysis of this incident was wrong." Okay, and he goes on to say, "The rule of unsafe entry is premised on having control of your vehicle. Vettel was on the grass and exiting grass did not. Any interruption of Hamilton in that correction phase was a racing incident. If Vettel had not gone off the track, he would have been entitled to defend any attempt by Hamilton to pass him. He would not have been penalized for closing a gap unless there had been a second move under braking. So if Vettel had not regained control, this was a racing incident. If he had regained control, then the fact of him going off the track and re-entering the track should not have resulted in an unsafe entry re-entry penalty, since the re-entry was complete. His block on Hamilton, if under control, would have been a fair defense of his position, as a single move under braking where Hamilton was not far enough ahead to justify giving racing room. Hamilton did not give racing room to Verstappen in Monaco, nor should he have been expected to. Hamilton rarely gives, and I'm going to use the inverted commas here, racing room to anyone, as his multiple bumps with Rosberg et al. Attests to. The stewards made a bad decision that hurts Formula One." And I by and large, agree with what Richard is saying in the or in his email there. And I think it does, at the end of the day, I think it is an incident that really looks bad for Formula One, regardless if that's what the rules say, and the stewards are forced into that position, then that's just the way it is. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it just doesn't make the sport look good, right?
No, I agree, Mark. I don't disagree. But on top of that, we're talking about the symptom and the symptom and the symptom now. But in all of this, we forget that Sebastian Vettel drove his car off the track in a very bad timing, in a race where he was leading, and he came back, and Lewis Hamilton was close. So let's not forget this. If Vettel doesn't go off track with his car, he wins the race. He went off track, he didn't win. I guess if all happenstance, would Hamilton have not taken, like, Hamilton did take his foot off the pedal. There's no pedal. I know it's on the steering wheel, but he put his finger off the gas button, I guess, to not crash into Vettel. Would he have done that, knowing if that rule doesn't exist, that you just have to overtake him? Maybe he would have just gone to his left and overtake him that way. So there's that too. The lack of risk taken in Hamilton there could be explained by Hamilton knowing there's that rule and knowing that what he saw didn't fit that rule. He knew there was going to be something about it. He's like, well, I'm just going to play it safe. And I think that's where we all are irked a bit about by this, Mark, is we're tired of seeing F1 playing it safe. Okay, when I'm playing it safe, I'm not talking about safety. I'm talking about being way too conservative all the effing time. And I think that's one of the things that's taken out the soul of Formula One right now. Is everyone's really conservative. We're counting our chickens before they hatch, but we're doing it so in a way that we control everything about the hatching of the chicken, so we actually know what's going to happen. I just want eventually to have more of monkey thrown in the wrench. You know, that's what's missing in Formula One.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I think that's what the frustrating thing about it is that, okay, the rules are structured in such a way that maybe the stewards have no choice but to rule in the way that they do. And that's fine. But like I say, that doesn't make it the best outcome for Formula One, because now all Hamilton has to do is stay within 5 seconds, and he doesn't even really need to push Vettel. I mean, now the onus is upon Sebastian to push harder and harder and harder to make sure that he finishes 5.001 seconds in front of Lewis Hamilton if he wants to keep the victory. So it really robbed everybody of what was looking to be a very exciting finish to the race. And the big issue that I have with it is that a couple of years ago, they were basically coming out, Formula One, that is, saying, oh, well, we're going to be lighter on the stewards' decisions because we're going to give them more latitude as to what is a racing incident and what isn't. I mean, a couple of weeks ago in Monaco, Max was hit with that 5-second penalty for the unsafe release in the pits. Fair enough. I mean, that was a dangerous situation because Bottas was pushed into the barrier there. And of course, two cars coming together in a pit lane where there's literally hundreds of people standing literally inches away from the left-hand side of the cars where all the pit boxes are. That is a legitimate safety issue. And we saw that with Sergio Perez and a couple of stewards running across the pit lane where it rejoins the track at Monaco. Very, very dangerous. So that was a justified penalty to Verstappen. But this one, I saw more as a racing incident. I didn't see it as an intentional move by Sebastian Vettel to block Lewis Hamilton. Whether or not it was, I mean, only Sebastian Vettel can really answer that question. Maybe subconsciously he's blocking himself from coming out and coming out and saying it, and he's a little bit in denial. Or perhaps he just reacted in the way that he said that he did. And I think that that the truth is probably somewhere in between. But having said that, I think that they should have just let it slide. I mean, it's fine to reduce or review that that whole incident. But at the end of the day, like you said, there wasn't bits of bodywork coming off of the car. Hamilton wasn't really inconvenienced, or he didn't have his car damaged. I mean, all he had to do was just put the foot on the brakes for a second or two. So, I mean, he was only inconvenienced momentarily. And the way that he was catching Vettel and was right on his rear wing and right on his gearbox at that point, he probably would have passed him in a couple of corners anyways. So, well, I guess maybe not. Who knows? I mean, that's another one that's more speculation yeah, yeah. than anything. So,
but one thing that I want to mention too, Mark, is yeah. the 5-second penalty things where they take the penalty at the end of the race. Oh, well, we're taking 10 seconds off your time and you go from first to third. I don't like it. I really don't like that. It's so yeah. counterintuitive for me. Make him a stop and go penalty. Make him go drive through the pit. Make him stop 2 seconds on the side of the road and make him start again. Make him go out of the car to 10 push-ups and go back into the car and then strive. But that's more fair to me than just taking the time off, because it's artificial, yeah. Right? It feels video gamey. It feels where
it does, yeah.
Where you crossed the line first, but you know you stepped over the red line 20 laps ago, so we have to take 5 laps away from your time, 5 seconds away from your time, and oh well, too bad you finished second now.
Yeah, well, you know, there has to be a better way to do it, but maybe not, because if you do the drive-through penalty in the pits, all of a sudden that's what is a 5 seconds deducted or added onto your time at the end of the race now becomes a 20-second penalty in effect, or maybe a little bit less because you're not actually stopping the car. But
which goes back to the threshold of penalties. If you did something that's not like, oh yeah, you did something wrong, but not wrong enough to want to penalize you 20 seconds, then don't penalize them. Like, you yep. either penalize some, you did something you're not supposed to, you get a 25 seconds penalty. You go into the pit and you get out of the pit, finish with the, yep. that's it, that's all. But the threshold of what's a penalty and what's not has to be a bit higher. And I think that might be the best solution eventually. Just go back to the way it was. Why are we always trying to reinvent the wheel? It's round, it goes straight, it works.
Yeah, well, you're not alone in that that sentiment, Kevin, because Ross Brawn also wants Formula One to better explain these penalty decisions. Because if you actually see the official release from the stewards, there is not a lot of explanation as to what their reasoning was. It was just, okay, he infringed article such and such. This is what happened. This is the decision. And if they don't like it, they can appeal it within the appropriate time frame, which, of course, Ferrari has decided to do. But that's it. It was like literally about a quarter page, not even in length. So
it reminds me, Mark, of you've seen those before. The pool reporter at a soccer game, when you're trying to ask a question to the referee, you got like 140 letters you can write, and they answer you in a box. And it's like, answers the question literally with articles of this rule, no other words, no more details, no explanation of the interpretation of the rule. And I guess that's where we're all asking for more is, okay, the rule is saying this, but what does this mean to you versus what does this mean to me, and what does this mean to Vettel versus what this means to Mercedes, and are we actually talking all the same language? And I think that goes to what Vettel was saying in the post race interview too. Like, I don't like this language thing where now it's literally, did you impede? Did you like come unsafely, release, come back on the track? It's like those type of vocabulary, that lingo. It's, come on, it's car racing. Who finishes first, second, and third? And at the end of the day, if the guy's alive, the guy's not dead, if the guy's not, car's not broken, there's a, yeah. I don't know if there's reasons and there's safety issues, of course.
Yep.
But I think there's a bit too much bubble wrap. I think we need to see a bit more chaos. I don't care if a few cars get broken in here or there. It makes for an interesting season. Because, well, championship's over. It's June 13th. Lewis Hamilton's going to win his 7th championship. 6th, 7th. I think it doesn't matter. I can't even remember, Mark. It happens too often.
Well, exactly, and that's the big thing at the end of the whole discussion is the one guy that probably doesn't need to benefit from a decision like that is the one guy that did benefit from it. And like you say, I mean, he's well on his way to a 6th world championship now, Lewis, that is. And I mean, it's just unfortunate there. I mean, I think if you ask Lewis straight up, how do you want to win a race? Do you want to win it by being awarded it on basically what's a technicality, or do you want to win it in a straight up fight? And I think honestly, obviously, he's going to say he's going to want to win it in a straight up fight, because I thought it was really good the race before the battle that he had with Max in Monaco, and just how that came down to that one decisive moment at the end of the tunnel going to the chicane, and Max locked it up a little bit. They had a bit of a bump, and that was about it. But it was good fun, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, nobody suffered. I mean, Lewis managed to hang on. Max wasn't even able to pass him. And, well, unfortunately, he was in the same position as Sebastian. If he did pass Lewis, he was going to have to find a way to get 5 seconds in front of him, which in Monaco seems like a really huge task. But it is true, though, what Vettel said after the race. And he said, it's not the sport that I fell in love with. And he goes on to talk about that they all sort of talk like lawyers now. And that's a good point. I mean, if I want to see some gripping courtroom drama, then I'm going to watch Harvey Specter in Suits, right? So,
well, Your Honor, on that note, we're going to say a little note to our sponsors here on the Overtime Media Network, and we'll be right back after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back on Scuderia F1 Podcast. Talking about courtrooms and talking about lawyers. Mark, oh no, wait, we're talking about Formula One and we're talking about the Montreal Grand Prix. You know what's sad in all this too, Mark, is we're not talking about other drivers that did good on the day. And Canadian boy Lance Stroll from 17th to 9th, overtaken a few people, shades of 2017 at the Montreal Grand Prix for the kid.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a much more good race for Lance, obviously. I mean, last year he didn't even make it around the first lap, was it? Was it on lap one we had the big coming together with Brandon Hartley?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, his day was over very, very quickly. But, Dale, good on him. I mean, we've been critical quite a bit to Lance this season that he hasn't really performed as we were hoping. And of course, you know, he's always seems to be knocked out in Q1. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, getting a ninth position after that storming first lap, I think it's a really, really good result for them. I think not just for Lance, but for Racing Point in general. I mean, they've struggled a little bit. Unfortunately, his teammate Sergio Perez was out of the points in 12th, but still, it getting one of them in there was good news. And if you're going to do well in a Grand Prix, you always want to do good at the one at home. Although you might not want to remind Charles Leclerc what happened in Monaco about 3 or 4 weeks ago, but good outing for Lance Stroll on Sunday afternoon.
Speaking of Charles Leclerc, third, not bad at all for the kid. He had some good pace late in the race, could have done more, but I think not only Charles Leclerc, Mark, but I think a few other drivers were caught by the lack of security car in this race. Usually we have one. Usually on a normal Montreal Grand Prix, usually the weather's not that great like it was this entire weekend, which it was the best 3 days of 2019 so far in this city I've seen the weather-wise. But we do see, though, with a race in Montreal that is unpredictable some years because of the track or because of the weather, if it's slippery and you have accidents at the first turn, it's unpredictable. So it's not like you know your clear-cut strategy. So you always keep an eye. You always keep a plan B or a plan S for a security car in your portfolio or in your back pocket when you're driving in Montreal. And you're always wary of it. So you never pull the trigger quick enough on your pit stop, or you don't want to be caught off if there's one and you just pitted or you have to go pit. And so you're always a bit careful. And I think Charles Leclerc mentioned that after the race, like, we were a bit hesitant because of this, and we did plan in case there was going to be one and it never showed up. So we pitted a bit too late and we got caught and we couldn't really make up that time at the end of the race. But yeah, it could have been a bit better for Leclerc, but I think there's a few other drivers like this, like Ricciardo as well, where they could have, if there would have been that safety car at the right moment where they could have expected it, which didn't come this year, and it does change the strategy of teams.
Yeah, well, you know, it's also interesting that you give a shout out there to Danny Ricciardo. I mean, Yeah, as good as it was to see Lance Stroll up in the points for Racing Point, it was, for me, it was good to see that Renault actually looked fairly competitive this weekend. Okay, they qualified pretty good and then started the race on the soft tires compared to everybody else that was on medium or hard tires. But still, at the end of the race, 6th and 7th for Danny Ricciardo and Nico Hülkenberg, in which was the best finish of the season for them so far, because it's like, ever since they had that rather embarrassing double DNF in Bahrain earlier in the season, it really seemed like they've struggled and they just haven't been anywhere positive or really in the position that I've expected them. I think a lot of people, but Ricciardo was saying that coming into Montreal, or that at least coming down the road, to use a Formula One metaphor, if you want to, that the update that they're going to introduce at the French Grand Prix should really be a big leap for them, but certainly in Montreal it was good for them. And it's a bit of an unusual top 10 if you look at it. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Charles Leclerc, Valtteri Bottas, Max Verstappen. That's not an unusual top five in Formula One. But then seeing Danny Ricciardo, Nico Hülkenberg, Lance Stroll, and then Danny Kvyat in the rest of the top 10. Obviously, we had Lance Stroll in 9th and Max Verstappen in 5th. So, I mean, it was an interesting top 10, the way that it kind of changed everything around. And it's funny, though, when you say that when it comes to Montreal, there's always the expectation that there is going to be a safety car, but it was almost unpredictable in the fact that there wasn't. And I think, like you say, that caught people out to a certain extent. But again, if we can just go back to talk about the whole Vettel-Hamilton controversy, and we'll just kind of bring Charles Leclerc into the discussion for the moment. Right at the very end of the race, it was interesting that gap between Hamilton and Vettel and Charles was actually getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I was saying to my wife as we were watching the Grand Prix, I said, you know, if they're not careful, Vettel could end up in third position before this is all said and done.
Yeah,
and Ferrari. Yeah, and Ferrari actually said after the race that they just plain forgot to mention to Charles that he had to that he had to make sure that he was 5 seconds behind Sebastian. And I thought, gosh, you know, there's another interesting kind of peek into the management structure of Ferrari
or the lack thereof.
But, yeah, lack thereof, absolutely.
Or the conspiracy theorists would be like, oh, well, they told Charles, but Charles didn't want to listen, so he pushed, and they didn't want to make Charles look that bad to be like, well, just say that we didn't tell him.
Yeah.
Which could be true, too. Who knows?
Yeah, well, it was very much like kind of like a Bahrain. I thought it was classic. You know, you had Vettel leading the race. Was he leading the race? I can't remember. But the one point when he was in front of Charles, Charles was obviously faster, and they told him, you know, stay a couple of laps behind him before you overtake. And then, you know, he just went and overtook him about not even half a lap further.
Like 90 seconds later, like, geez, yeah. What did I just tell you, Charles?
Yeah, exactly. So that was very interesting. So, Kevin, let's take one final break here. It's kind of a short show this week. We'll take one final break here on the Overtime Media Network, and we'll come back and close it up for the week. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Okay, Kevin, well, here we go. We are into the home stretch for the week here. So there were a couple of other interesting things that did go in and around the Grand Prix. And Jacques Villeneuve had to come in and weigh in a very sort of typical Jacques Villeneuve way. And after the race, he said he felt that Ricciardo, not Sebastian Vettel, deserved a penalty in Canada for basically impeding Valtteri Bottas, and that was kind of contradicted by Danny Ricciardo himself, who said he rather enjoyed what he said, quote, making life difficult for Valtteri. But it was kind of interesting to get Jacques' take on the whole Hamilton Vettel controversy, and it was kind of funny, like I say, to see Ricciardo completely contradict him. But Jacques basically said it was a racing incident, and he said that the whole situation wasn't racing, and basically he was echoed everybody else's sentiments and let them race.
Yeah, I don't disagree with Jacques, but you know, the fact to say that Ricciardo played the movable speed bump in front of Bottas for a few laps, it's not false, but it's up to you to overtake me. I'm not gonna make life easy for you. It's like if you're doing it. Let's put the same thing in another sport. Okay, I'm in front of you. We're runners. We're track and field athletes. We're in front of each other. I know you're coming behind me. Am I gonna make it easy for you to pass? Am I gonna step out of my lane and make sure your lane's open, or am I gonna make sure that maybe I'm just gonna put a little shoulder closer to the line that I would normally? Well, there's that. Like, you have to overtake the person in front of you. You're faster? Good. Being faster is not enough. You still have to overtake me without losing time while you're overtaking me. And you have to take the risk. Are you confident enough in your abilities to do so? Or is it going to take you a few times to work yourself up to finally be able to pass me? And I think there's a little bit of that. If I'm Ricciardo, like, hey, dude, you have to pass me. I don't have to make it easy for you. And it's kind of part of my job to try to maintain my ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's not obligated to move out of the way for Bottas. And you would think under normal circumstances, Danny Ricciardo in a Renault and Valtteri Bottas in a Mercedes, there should not be any contest between the two of them, although Bottas was struggling with high engine and brake temperatures, so it might not have been as easy as normal. And that's something that he suffered with early on in the race. And I mean, he did get him eventually, but again, interesting little side note from Jacques Villeneuve. But you know what was also interesting was the weird incident that Lando Norris had. And my first reaction, which I'm sure echoed everybody else that watched that race, was, oh, Lando, the rookie's gone and put it into the wall of champions. And when you saw the replay, he did absolutely nothing of the sort. He didn't do anything wrong. His car just fell apart and caught on fire. And McLaren still does not have an answer for why the right rear suspension failed on Lando's car. But that was a real, real bizarre incident.
I know why, Mark. You know why?
Tell me.
Because it's made by McLaren.
Well, yeah, that's that kind of really like puts back. I was really quite complimentary of them last week on the show, saying slowly but surely they're getting back to, or they're at least getting things pointed in the right direction. So to see the car literally fall apart and catch on fire on its own accord this past weekend was something completely unexpected.
I think it's McLaren's way to tell you, Mark, like, yeah, we're getting there, but we're not there yet.
There's still a little bit more work to do, and that's very, very true.
But so, before we say goodbye, Mark, for this week, I do have some more information on a bit of Sebastian Vettel's reactions. We saw he wasn't happy. We saw he moved the number 2 and number 1 sign in front of Lewis's car.
I would have done the same thing,
sure,
just for the record.
Yeah, probably. But what we didn't see is how he reacted backstage. Is vocal yelling at people. We did see on TV him walking through the Mercedes garage, which was kind of weird and awkward in a way. We did see him go in and out of stuff, but what we didn't see is him walking in alleyways that are lined up with people on both sides and the paddocks and back, with his elbows out, hitting people on the way and looking for a fight. The guy was looking for a fight. Even hitting people by mistake and even eating some people that were there for like VIP people. And those VIP people were not necessarily happy. Like, dude, what do you think you're doing? Like, calm the F down. And apparently he was really, really mad and saying things that are not necessarily complimentary. And there's a reason why he went to cool off before going back to the podium. And it's that cooling off period where those incidents happen. And I think it's a bit of a shame because you have the three people who gave the trophies. You had the Minister of Transport who gave the number one place trophy, Marc Garneau. You had the president of a tire company, I believe, was the second one, Pirelli. Yeah, the president of Pirelli was giving the number two trophy. And then you had Paul Cook, president of the ASN, which is the Association of the Signalers National. So it's basically the Stewards Association of Stewards National. So in the Canada version, Paul Cook is the president. So he gave the third trophy. And those were all people that were there when Sebastian Vettel hit a few people. And he could have had some people injured, but fortunately, no one was injured. And no one was really, like, taking back, and there was no fights or no pushing or shoving, but you did had a very angry and vocal Vettel behind the scene. Really not a good look, though, on how you handle a decision.
Well, I mean, before he even got out of the car, he was furious, and you could just hear it on the radio. I mean, a little bit more restrained, I guess, is the proper word, because we'll all remember the incident in Mexico. It was 2 or 3 years ago, the famous, well, Charlie speech that he gave when after that race that got him in a little bit of hot water after
well,
that
know,
one. But he was mad. I mean, I never really expected that. That he was the kind of fellow that has such a temper, but I've been proven wrong on a couple of occasions now.
Yeah, and you have to put yourself. We're going full circle here, but let's not forget the stewards are not full time employee following Formula One from track to track and race to race and country to country. They're regular people like you and I, who attend multiple seminars a month, a year, always up to date, always up to the new safety, security, rule features of the FIA and the track. They know this track by heart. They've been doing this for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, doing this once a year, but really having a lot of practice, of drills, of training, year in, year out. They don't make a lot of money. Those people are volunteers usually because you need a bunch of them. They're usually volunteers. And did you think the steward in charge of taking that decision really wanted to take that decision? He'd probably be the first one to be like, why didn't this happen at the other corner where I did not have jurisdiction? Why did this happen to my corner? Why have I have to take the decision? So I guess deep down inside of him or her, he's like, yeah, well, I don't want to take the decision. I don't want to be involved, but I believe so much in what I know and what I've been trained to do that I guess I have to do something. So there's that aspect to it, too. And I think it's important to not forget the humanity side of stewards. I think the stewards in charge and the stewards that are that corner probably feel terrible about it, too, today. And it did damper their weekend, too. And I think it's important to not necessarily forget the human aspect of stewards, and you cannot necessarily ask them to be robots because they're not. And it's important, and let's not forget they're volunteers that are giving multiple days, weeks, if not months, a year to this cause, because it is a cause. A lot of people are making a lot of money in the top end of motorsports, in the top end of Formula One. But for 99% of motorsports in general, it's about love, it's about passion, and it's about losing money. It's about volunteering. It's about paying to fill up your race car before you can drag on a Friday night, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good point that you raised, Kevin. But let's just finish it up now, and let's just remind everybody of the standings in the World Championship. On top, we have Lewis Hamilton opening up a fairly comfortable gap with 162 points. Valtteri Bottas sandwiched nicely between his teammate and Sebastian Vettel in third place with 133 points. Vettel with 100 points. Max Verstappen with 88. And Charles Leclerc Flair rounding out the top five in the World Championship with 72 points. And then do we really need to go over the constructors? Because it really is Mercedes and everybody else, but sure, why not? Just for fun, we have on the constructor side of the World Championship, Mercedes way out on top, way down the road, miles and miles ahead of everyone else with 295 points. Ferrari with 172 points. Red Bull with 124 points. And McLaren and Renault now getting very close in the best of the rest. McLaren still in fourth position with 30 points. Renault catching them up now with 28 with that very good finish they had in Montreal. And then there's everyone else. And Kevin, for this week, that's all I've got. And I'm done.
And on that note, you can follow me on Twitter at KevLarme. You can follow Mark at MarkJRDaily. And you can follow this show at Scuderia F1 Pod on Twitter, thanks to Overtime Media Network. That's where you can find podcast versions of this show. And until next time, as always, Mark, have a great Formula One.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 Podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.